The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. We have an exclusive story coming up for you in just a few minutes here that proves what we have been telling you about horrible, dangerous dysfunction with the King County Sheriff's Office. We will update you on that exclusive in just a couple of minutes. But we got other stories that really affect your life. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Our news partners at Cairo 7 and reporter Amy Clancy, they have uncovered some new police paperwork that is just amazing. These are documents just filed in King County Superior Court about something that happened at the post office in Ballard on 17th Avenue Northwest, where a woman was attacked with a pitchfork. This is absolutely horrifying. And as our mayor, city council, as they continue to let the streets get taken over by drug vagrants, our prosecutor as well, with this revolving door of justice. But wait till you hear the details of this story. So a woman, she was in her car right by the Ballard post office when 28-year-old Daniel Kuchta came up to her car. He had a pitchfork in his hands, and he tried to stab the woman multiple times with the pitchfork. At first, according to the police documents, she used her purse as a shield to protect her leg, but the 28-year-old stabbed the purse several times, and then when he saw that he wasn't going to be able to deliver a brutal blow to the leg with the pitchfork, he then switched and attempted to stab the woman in her chest and neck. The woman starts screaming out, "Help, he's trying to kill me." And that's when a witness and a bunch of construction workers in the area, they chased down the 28-year-old and they were able to hold him down until the police arrived. Now, here is where this story is almost identical to 1,000 others like it here in the Puget Sound area. The alleged assailant appeared high on narcotics. He admitted that he had just injected meth right before the assault. He has, as part of his criminal history, a 2009 attempted murder charge. But he was only a juvenile then. He was 17. That was in Oregon. Now, again, the most violent drug criminals are moving here from other states. And you can have our public officials try to deny that all they want, because there is a tremendous political desire to give us the impression, no, no, no. You grew up with these kids and they've just fallen on hard times. But you're just helping your childhood neighbors out. And it's just not true. And they have a bushel full of phony statistics. And one of the phoniest of statistics is that they're all from around here, or the vast majority are from around here. And this guy's story is another great example of how phony that statistic is. This guy's current address, listed in the SPD incident report, is a homeless shelter in Pioneer Square. Now, according to Jenny Durkin and the Seattle City Council, that means, oh, he's from King County. He's from here. But we know the truth. We know that he had an attempted murder charge in Oregon years ago. Earlier this year in Tacoma, Kuchta was charged with two misdemeanor assaults and obstruction of a public servant. He was released on his own recognizance. When he failed to appear at the court hearing, a warrant was issued for his arrest. I'm surprised he didn't appear. Sounds like a solid dude. Then we have the incident in the park in Ballard, or on the streets of Ballard, where he tries to stab a woman with a pitchfork. Oh, in between, he was given a 364-day sentence in Pierce County, but it was suspended. And 4 days later, he tried to kill this woman with the pitchfork. Now, are they going to go after attempted murder charges? No, of course not. They originally set bail at $75,000, but then when they found out about his alarming history of random violence, they raised it to $150,000. But if you start jabbing at a woman with a pitchfork, and I'm looking at a picture that Cairo 7 News obtained of this pitchfork, it is very sharp tongs on the pitchfork. And it looks clearly as if it's a deadly weapon. So why wouldn't that be attempted murder? Why wouldn't they pursue a charge that could lock this meth head up for years and years and years? Well, because they have there's no political will, either in the prosecutor's office or with any elected officials, to lock up attempted murderous meth heads. They would much rather figure out the easiest, quickest way to release this guy, put him back on the streets, and then express their shock and disappointment when he kills somebody the next time. It is unbelievable that 4 days after being in jail, this guy in Tacoma, that this guy's up in Ballard trying to kill a woman with a pitchfork. But that's the way it is in the Wild West that is the Puget Sound area these days. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
We do have a exclusive story. We just obtained these documents last night from Carolyn Osorio, our reporter, about what's going on in the King County Sheriff's Office. And it is shocking. We've been telling you for months now about the complete dysfunction under Sheriff Mitzi Johanknik. Complete dysfunction. And the Sheriff's Office, as I told you a couple of weeks ago, they called our management at the radio station instead of answering any of the questions that we have. Instead of maybe fixing some of the dysfunction, they have been calling the this is unheard of, unprecedented in my career, that government officials have tried to silence me and my show by calling my management. And it doesn't work. It simply does not work because it convinces me that the things that we are uncovering are spot on. And this letter that Carolyn Osorio obtained is more proof of it. So Carolyn got this late last night. This was through a public documents request. Mitzi Johanknik, the sheriff, she hired two chiefs. And just so you understand the hierarchy, there's the sheriff, the undersheriff. The sheriff is elected. Then you have the undersheriff. And then you have three chiefs who are appointed. Mitzi Johanknik, she alerted some of these chiefs that she was, or when they were aspiring for the job, that they were going to get the dream gig of a lifetime. But within a year and a half, one, and we've obtained the letter from him, one alleges pretty severe racial discrimination within the sheriff's office, and then the second one, Chief Lisa Mulligan, sent in her resignation, and as I said, Carolyn Osorio obtained this letter last night. And what she wrote was, Sheriff Johanknik and Undersheriff, I have made the decision to retire from the sheriff's office effective July 1st. I have come to this after countless hours of deliberating over the current management culture we are operating within and have created for our subordinates. I find it difficult to pinpoint one particular problem. There are many, and they all lead me to know with clarity that we are not an effective management team, nor are we being led, encouraged, or supported to become one. Sadly, with no efforts in place to try to overcome the dysfunction, I believe we are destined to continue down this futile path with no end in sight. I fear that our once thriving department will fail to thrive into the future. You deserve to be surrounded by people willing to support your goals and visions. I admit that I am still unclear about what those goals and visions are, and I can no longer try to pretend that I am on the same page as you or that I am privy to what you know. At this point in my life, I want only to give back to this profession which has been so good to me. I will be seeking new opportunities to have a positive impact on the men and women who serve in this profession. Now, you have to understand how damning this is, because we have been telling you for a long time that the sheriff's office and Mitzi Jo Hanknik is completely unqualified to do the job of sheriff. And I've only said that about one other public official in all of my years. But a picture has emerged. So now we have one of the highest ranking members of the department, the chief, Lisa Mulligan, one of the three chiefs, two of whom appointed by Jo Hanknik have now resigned. And you have this chief saying that she no longer has any faith in the sheriff's office. Carolyn Osorio, a reporter who obtained this letter, joins me live. And this is damning, this letter, because of the dysfunction. And this is from one of the top officials in the sheriff's office. And she makes it sound like right now with Jo Hanknik, the dysfunction is not fixable.
You know, it's no question it's damning. And not only is she... has she written the letter, but this chief is very well respected from all of my sources. She is beloved. And so when you read the letter, I mean, it's very compelling. You know, it's not angry. It's not, you know, it's almost, you know, throwing up the hands and just like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. When she says she fears the department will fail to thrive, this is what you and I have been hearing from a lot of longtime veterans of the King County Sheriff's Office who have told, I know, both of us individually, that they're terrified for what's happened to a department that they all seem to genuinely have loved.
Yes, and when you couple that with Chief Jarrell Will's complaint, I mean, it's very compelling evidence to, you know, it's really difficult to refute. Liz Rocha still has not gotten back to respond to, you know, my question about Liz Mulligan's...
Lisa Mulligan.
Lisa Mulligan's complaint. Or, you know, Jarrell Will's, which is a 12-page letter that begins with threatening space and goes so far as to actually bring up racism against that he felt, he allegedly felt he experienced underneath, under Sheriff Scott Summers.
So three chiefs in the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. One is alleging racial discrimination and has stepped down.
And bullying in a toxic work environment.
Right. Yes. Another one now is saying that it's just complete dysfunction. Everybody has said they fear for public safety because of all this dysfunction.
And it's important to note that in the past, when we've done stories and Liz Rocha had called our boss and said that we, you know, were being unfair and, you know, our ethics were brought up, you know, these letters speak for themselves and speak of the retaliatory culture that has actually spilled over to Cairo Radio. You know, we have been retaliated against, and I'm not, you know, we're not on our soapboxes here, but I mean, it's a big thing for, you know, somebody who's been in the media for, you know, decades to come over and say, hey, you know, and these letters prove that there is something, you know, that warrants a closer look.
Right. And just so people understand, you have asked many questions in writing. They have failed to respond. We have just, again, a couple of days ago, Nicole invited the sheriff or her chief staff to come on to our show and answer these questions. They refused to do so. They're circling the wagons, and now we're starting to see why, because as we get these documents, as to why chiefs are stepping aside. But the dysfunction is, I don't think there's any question of what we've been telling people, as it has now come from the very top of the department.
Well, and there is more to come, which we'll talk about on a later date, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, we will. Yeah, and you can keep the tips coming, because every time we bring up the sheriff's office, people send us tips that we are pursuing, and you're asking us, please help, because I know how desperate things have gotten there. All right, great reporting, Carolyn. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dory.
Carolyn Osorio joining us live up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Yesterday, we talked about this 13-year-old vandal at Seattle City Hall. Little girl, she had a can of spray paint. And, you know, it's very nice rock. I don't know if it's marble. I don't know what kind of stone it is. But we spent a fortune as taxpayers on Seattle City Hall. And a little 13-year-old vandal girl, she has a can of indelible spray paint. And she's part of some climate activist group. And the report is that some 25-year-old guy who was with her as part of this group gave her the spray paint, said that it was washable chalk, and it wasn't. And this girl who, look, a lot of people said that I was too tough on her. I think 13-year-old vandals who cause thousands of dollars worth of damage, which is the amount of manpower it's going to cost to clean off that spray paint, I think they're little punks. And then she was, you know, screaming and cussing as the Seattle police handcuffed her.
Get her.
I think that's the 13-year-old. What the bleep? And she's crying. And yesterday at the Seattle City Council meeting, that 13-year-old girl got up to speak. And I tell you what, yes, I fault the kid who's old enough to know better. Without knowing the specifics of this family, the parents likely play a role. Maybe they're proud of their little climate activist. Maybe they are not proud and they just don't have any control over what their 13-year-old's doing running around with some 25-year-old climate activist guy in the middle of a Friday afternoon. But there's more to this story, and it's how shamefully the Seattle Times reported it. And I'll give the Seattle Times tons of praise when they do something that's praiseworthy. But the way they reported this story is pathetic. And in the Fastest 15, you're going to hear from that 13-year-old girl. You're going to hear from a 16-year-old climate activist. You're going to hear from a Seattle City Councilwoman, guess which one, who defends these little vandals. And it's another example of the dysfunction that begins at the very top in our region here. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Speaking of dysfunction, last week we had a story about a pub in Pioneer Square where a customer was violently assaulted. It took Seattle police 6 hours to respond. And the Seattle Police Guild puts all of this on our mayor and our council. And we're going to talk to them about that dysfunction next as we get rolling here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, if you were listening last week to the Dory Monson Show, we had a story about a restaurant pub in Pioneer Square called Collins Pub. And they told the story about the assaults that they have to deal with. And when they call 911, even when there's an assault, they just can't get any response. Seth Howard is the owner of Collins Pub, and he said that, yeah, they cannot get a response even when there is an assault on their customers.
And it's basically become a full-time job for me to shoo away unwanted elements, guests, people bothering my guests. I've had people walk out on their lunch weekly, certainly several times a month, where a guest is threatened by homeless while they're trying to enjoy their beer and their lunch on the outdoor cafe.
Do you?
My calls to 911 are widely ignored, unfortunately.
And Seth Howard told Dave Bowes, who's sitting in for me, an example of how long it takes to get a response.
We usually eventually see them. I think the best example is about 5 or 6 years ago, we called somebody, actually came into the restaurant, sucker punched an unknowing guest in the back of the head. The guy was injured. We tried to keep the guy that assaulted him in the building. We called 911 two or three times in 50 minutes. 6 hours later, the cops came in with their hands on their holsters and said, "Where is he? Where's the guy?" Needless to say, he and the victim were long gone.
6 hours after a customer was sucker punched in the back of the head, they got a response. And after our story ran on Twitter, the Seattle Police Officers Guild linked to our My Northwest story. And then they said, "Collins Pub, you, our customers, are victims of Seattle public safety politics. Our members care. A 911 wait is unacceptable. We want to help." And the vice president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild is Mike Solon. He joins us here on Cairo Radio. Mike, I really appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Hey, Dory, it's my pleasure to be on the show and highlight this public safety crisis that we find ourselves in Seattle.
It is a crisis. If people are getting physically assaulted and it takes 6 hours to respond, obviously that story made you reach out on Twitter. Tell me why you posted the tweet and had reacted to it the way you did.
Well, as police officers, and I've been a cop for 20 years, I'm embarrassed by the state of our city. And the reason why we're in this predicament is because political officials lack the willpower to hold criminal behavior accountable. And then now we see that political pressure is put on the local police officer through administrative policies and procedures that hold them unreasonably accountable for their actions by doing a job, thus leading the regular police officer responding to calls handcuffed to be able to do their jobs appropriately. And the political will in this city is unwilling to stand up for the community to say enough is enough. And as a taxpayer in this city, as a local resident where I own property, I am embarrassed personally to walk downtown and see the blight and the circumstances we all find ourselves in. As somebody who represents the membership, who deeply care about this city, because as law enforcement professionals, we made the decision to become police officers to help people. And when we cannot help people, well, right there is a fundamental issue that we take umbrage to, is being unable to do our job. So we really feel for the owners, the patrons of Collins Pub, but it's not just them. It's the local businesses, the people that are fed up, the silent majority who see what's going on. And we are just awestruck at the lack of response that we saw on Twitter to Collins Pub. And we want to help, and we want to let the public know, we want to change the narrative of where we, people, the activists, the loud, small minority of people that are constantly have the drumbeat of police reform. Well, you know what? Enough is enough. Let us do our jobs. Let us help the people that actually bring economy into this city, spend the dollars, and not push people away. So we're fed up, Dory.
I don't blame. Well, and you and a lot of others, and you're right about the silent majority who have had it. So who do you point fingers at, as you know, you individually, Mike, and as a Seattle Police Officers Guild? Are we talking about the mayor, the city council, SPD leadership? Who are we pointing fingers at?
Well, I don't have a problem with SPD leadership right now. The problem is our elected officials, where we see the city council, certain individual calling us murderers, spreading lies and deceit, and frankly, unbelievable negativity towards our membership. That leads to a recruitment and retention crisis, where officers now feel that they cannot do their jobs appropriately. And that loud, small majority of activists, and that's what they are. They're activists that have taken a hold of the public safety narrative and spun it in a way that is detrimental to our community, because our membership are proud public safety professionals that are dedicated to this job. I'm not saying don't hold us accountable. We are accountable every day we put that uniform on. We are human beings. We have families. We have kids. We have such a dedication to this job that when we're called those things and we're treated this way, when we don't feel we have the support of our elected officials, then we're completely in that mindset to say, what else can happen to us? What else can happen to this community? When will our elected officials actually stand up and show their support for the men and women who wear the badge and do their jobs? Now, it's not just impacting us. This trickles down in a big way.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very dangerous for the city. Yeah, no, it's very dangerous for the city.
Absolutely.
So what's your reaction, Mike, when we had a primary last Tuesday, three Seattle City Council incumbents on the ballot, and they all got the most votes? I mean, there was a lot of talk that there was going to be some radical sea change in Seattle politics because of the silent majority that you're talking about. But it seems like a lot of voters were just okay with the status quo, including Sawant.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that there wasn't that big of a turnout, which, you know, is probably the historic participation when it comes to those primaries. And I can tell you, as a union, we're heavily involved in that election. Now, were we disappointed? Well, we weren't surprised, but to not say we weren't disappointed would not be being truthful. And we're on the business end of being true, having facts and speaking the truth. I pray that silent majority stands up this coming election and actually has a say in how their city is governed and how their city is run, so we can change this crisis into something that doesn't need to be here anymore.
Yeah. Well, look, when
it comes down to the political will to get the job done, and it comes down to the Seattle voter. So we're doing everything we can to try to highlight this, to have a solution, because we just don't want to be that loud entity that just has a problem with what's going on. We want to have solutions.
No,
the solutions is getting your ballot and vote.
I know. One of the problems, though, is we've become a petri dish for this national socialist anti-cop movement, and more than half of Sawant's dollars came from out of state. So I mean, yeah, there are just forces at play that want to fundamentally destroy any respect between cops and the city. Hey, one last thing, Mike, before I let you go, because I've been commenting on this the last couple of days. We talked about the politicians and how they've targeted the police. I got to tell you, I could not believe, and I'll praise the Seattle Times when they do good work, but that story they had yesterday about the 13-year-old vandal who spray-painted City Hall, I don't know that they could have spun that story in a more anti-cop way. And I don't know if you read that story, but I was shocked by the anti-cop rhetoric that the Seattle Times, in a supposedly objective news story, used as they were reporting just officers doing their job, arresting a vandal at City Hall.
Again, what that highlights is that loud, silent majority of activists, silent minority of activists, have stolen the public safety narrative to blame the police. This is social engineering as an experiment, and now the police department is on center stage as having basically that experiment going forward, trying to handcuff the officers from doing their jobs on a daily basis, where we end up second-guessing ourselves with fear of being held accountable unreasonably in the press, on social media, you name it. And so our political officials listen to those activist voices and act accordingly, punishing the officers. So this lead, that is a great example as to why Seattle and a large part of this nation is in this public safety crisis, where this anti-police sentiment is flavor of the month. And we are tired of it. We want to do our jobs. We implore the citizens of this city to support their officers and vote. Please vote the elected officials out of office that play into this activist reform movement as far as holding the police unreasonably accountable. We are tired of it. Enough is enough. Let us do our jobs. We are professionals who are dedicated our lives and professions to helping this community.
Yeah, no, I agree.
All we want to do is help.
I'll hold you guys accountable, but I'm not going to engage in witch hunts because I have too much respect for the job that the men and women
absolutely
of the department do. All right, Mike. Well, I appreciate you speaking up on behalf of the business owners and the citizens, and I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on with me this afternoon.
Thanks, Dory, for leading the fight. Appreciate it.
You bet. All right, Mike Solon, he's the vice president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, let's take you out on the presidential campaign trail for just a couple of moments here. Donald Trump right now is in Pennsylvania speaking at a plant. He's been touting the fact that Barack Obama said we could never bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States. And the president is speaking right now saying, well, we've brought back 600,000 manufacturing jobs. So we'll have some audio of that for you a little bit later this afternoon. And then you have a bunch of Democrats who want to unseat Donald Trump in 2020. One of them is Kamala Harris. And I have a soundbite for you that just shows why politicians and the way they talk just make me crazy. So Kamala Harris is one who wants a complete government takeover of health care. And as I've said many times, I really like my health care. And I don't want the United States government, which is unable to do anything efficiently. I don't want the United States government to take over all health care in the country. No private health care would be allowed under her vision. So Kamala Harris, on the campaign trail, she went to a senior old folks home, senior old, and she talked to a 91-year-old woman who wanted her and the rest of government to leave her health care alone. Listen to how Kamala Harris talks to this 91-year-old woman like she's a 5-year-old child and lies to her, by the way.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, of course.
I understand that you are advocating health care.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, the woman says, I understand you're advocating government taking over all health care. Kamala Harris says, yes, we are.
Well, we're going to pay for it because right now, let me tell you something, we're all paying for health care for everyone.
Okay, how about that? So the woman says, who's going to pay for it? And Kamala Harris says,
well, we're going to pay for it.
We're going to pay for it. No, what she means is you are going to pay for it. The middle class is going to pay for it with the most massive middle class tax hike in the history of the United States. But then she goes on to just talk to her in such a condescending way.
Right now, let me tell you something. We're all paying for health care for everyone, and it's in an emergency room. Okay.
The woman says, we like our health care system as it is. We don't want you to mess with it.
Okay, I don't intend to mess with Medicare.
Kamala says, I don't intend to mess with it. That's a lie. You want to take it all away and privatize it. And she's trying to tell the woman, well, if you're on Medicare, it's just going to be Medicare for all.
Okay, well, I want to make sure your health care is the way you like it. So I'll promise you that, okay? I won't mess with the health care that you have.
I won't mess with the health care you have. If the woman says she's not on Medicare, she does have some private insurance. That's just a lie. And she's talking to this 91-year-old woman who, by virtue of what I'm sure is a life well lived, deserves to be treated with some modicum of respect and not condescended to, like she's a 5-year-old child. But Kamala Harris knows what's better. She'll take care of everybody. Sickening. Best 15's next.